You are listening to WIOX Roxbury Community Radio in the Catskills at 91.3 FM and from the Catskills to the world at WIOXradio.org. Let's swing it.
WIOX is supported by the Alzheimer's Association, providing the public with educational programs, support groups, and a staff of experts to help navigate the challenges of Alzheimer's disease, a global epidemic that affects more than 20 million Americans. Information 24 hours a day at 800-272-3900 or alz.org.
WIOX is supported by the Rec Center, the Catskill Recreation Center in Arkville, with a 25-yard lap pool, a weight-in pool for kids, exercise facilities, an array of personal training and fitness programs. The Catskill Recreation Center, County Route 38 in Arkville, open 7 days a week. More information at 845-586-6250 or CatskillRecreationCenter.org.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20 and at WIOXradio.org on the web and any smart device. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. We talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. And every third Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., we get Gary Mead over here at the studio, and he talks about a different tree species with us. So, Gary, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. How you doing, Ryan?
John.
We had a snow squall. John. We had a snow squall today.
That was the first that I've seen.
Yeah, that was... last weekend, Saturday, I was going to the mill, and it was like a thick rain. It was almost, but today we got sleet. I mean, it was, it really come down, and it was like a little quick storm that went through. But
I saw the weather report. It looks like it's getting down into the upper 20s tonight in most areas of the Catskills.
Yep.
And some more rain and snow showers following. So we could even wake up to a little white ground tomorrow, but who knows? I'm no weatherman.
No. And, you know, the ground's still warm, so it's going to be a bit before, you know, anything will stick for any length of time.
Absolutely. That's true.
And, you know, it does our apples good, you know, what little apples we have out there. When I first started pressing cider 40 years ago and gathering apples, I used to get to the mill in September, and Bob Hubble, after the second or third year I went there, he said, geez, not for nothing, but he said, you should let those, he said, you should get the longevity apples, the ones that stay on the tree until the end, you know, the middle or the end of October. And he said, they're the ones that make the best cider and juice. So they got the longevity gene, I guess. And when they frost, they get sweeter. You know, and It's like your Brussels sprouts. You know, you get them good. If you eat them before they get frosted, they taste bitter. But, boy, I usually harvest my Brussels sprouts around Thanksgiving. And, you know, okay. They're really sweet by then. And, you know, the plants kind of wilt after 20-degree night or 22 degrees. And, you know, the sun comes out the next day, and they look just as healthy as ever. The frost don't seem to bother them.
All right.
Well, we're talking about catalpa tonight. It's
absolutely.
A very interesting tree, and it's known as the bean tree. And it's a native tree to Mississippi, you said, John, right?
From my research, yeah, it's from the Mississippi Valley area, so Arkansas. I think it's even spreading into Tennessee, Mississippi yep. Valley. And south, there's a southern catalpa and a northern catalpa. The northern catalpa has been propagated everywhere across the United States for almost 200 years now.
Yep.
So that's why we find it in the Northeast. It's most of the time it's planted for ornamental values, but every now and then you find one or two or a few or a group of them that are growing on their own. And Gary hit it on the head. It's the bean tree.
Yeah, that's what most people
easy to identify in somebody's lawn this time of year when you drive by and see those big, stringy, exaggerated seed pods that could be up to 24 inches long. They look like green beans.
Yeah, they look like huge green beans. And, you know, with the, you know, looking at the profile we have on this tree here is, it's, I didn't realize this until tonight that it's, the heartwood is very rot resistant. And I know the consistency of it because I have worked a little bit of it. I've never sawed a log, but I've worked some of the lumber from it. And, you know, it reminds me of butternut or basswood because it's a hardwood, but it's soft, but it's very durable. And, you know, it's kind of grayish brown. It's a real pretty wood. And, you know, I know a lot of the sap, or the, actually the sap and the heartwood is used for a lot of trim in houses, and you know it's very soft and easily painted. If somebody wants to paint it, it's got the closed pores but it's a beautiful tree, and there's so many medicinal uses from it. And you know, I had a guy come to the gallery last week that, and that's when I decided, let's do catalpa, because he was asking me about catalpa. How do you grow it? How do you get it started? He wanted to put some on his property. And it's a fast-growing tree. So, you know, you really need to kind of put that into your idea where you're going to place them, and there's a lot of cleanup involved with the beans, and the leaves are huge.
Yeah, well, let's talk just a bit about the identification, because some people still might not know what we're talking about. Catalpa tree, even though if you've never heard of it before, you've probably seen it on somebody's front lawn. It's big, huge, heart-shaped leaves. They could be a foot or sometimes a little longer.
Yeah.
Not the biggest leaves, and they're big, heart-shaped with a big drip point at the bottom. Those spindly beans, and in the springtime they're very they flower
right.
Big white flower, so you see those in the spring, and that's really why they're planted for ornamental values.
Yeah.
But like you were saying, they grow fast and they can get big.
Yeah.
And they're not long lived in tree life, maybe 60 to 80 years, and that's about it for a tree. That's not that old.
No, it's not. And they're not that strong. I mean, the limbs, you know, with a stiff wind or heavy snow, they do kind of break, but they're confined and they grow tight. They don't spread out like a lot of trees, and they, you know, they don't have, I've never seen any of them with more than like an 8 or 10 inch bole, which is the log at the bottom. Seems like the branches start, you know, like your maples and that, and cherries, you'll grow 30, 40 feet before the first limb sometimes, but you never see that with a catalpa tree. They're more like a bushy tree. They use them, people put them around their property and on their lawns for shade. They don't grow good in the shade either, so they got to have, you know, quite a bit of, they're not shade intolerant.
They are, yeah, they're shade intolerant.
They're shade intolerant.
So,
yep.
So therefore, they can't grow in the shade. And that's why they're never going to become a problem throughout the forest, so to speak, as far as spreading. And
yep.
Even though it's still, it's not an invasive species, so to speak, but it's something that, I don't know, I guess it's been deemed in the Northeast as invasive because it's not from here, but it's from the Mississippi. It's from here. But like I said, it's never going to become a problem in the forest because it's shade intolerant in the Northeast hardwoods.
Well, the biggest one I know locally
is
on 30, and Lynn Bradley owns a house there, but there's a ginormous catalpa tree on his lawn. I've admired that for many, many years, and it's probably nearing the end of its life cycle. It's got to be... I never pulled up in the driveway. I know Lynn too, so he probably wouldn't mind if I went and kind of measured it and looked at it. And I might just do that now. That and if it, you know, has any kind of a problem, that's one tree I'd like to get down to the mill and saw it up. And because a lot of our trees will last 150 to 200, you know, live to that 200 years old, but you know. If you find a 100-year-old catalpa, that's an amazing age tree. And but there's a lot of and I didn't realize this either until I was reading the literature on it, is the medicinal purposes, you know, properties of this tree they're amazing. The beans, the pods, the leaves, the bark. I mean, it seems like everything except for the wood is medicinal in one aspect or another.
Yeah, it seemed to me like there was a lot of respiratory aid in the medicinal purposes of this tree. It's like the beans were and the pods were chopped up for some sort of asthmatic.
Yeah, chronic bronchial infections and asthma, labored breathing, and heart problems. And, you know, juice from the leaves or roots, if you put it around, if you had a swelled up eye or something from, you know, maybe pollen, you know, related, whatever, it would, you know, pull out the antibodies in your eye and, heal your eye. The green leaves are crushed and placed on swollen lymph glands, and it will pull the poison out of your lymph glands, which is another pretty cool thing that, some of these cancer doctors might be looking at. But the pharmaceutical does use it in certain properties and some of the drugs that they use for treating cancers or different types. But let's see, the bark was dried and ground to a powder and brewed in tea, and that would also release antioxidants, which would, kind of heal your lymph nodes if you had a any kind of infection in them or something that was starting. Modern pharmaceutical research, catalpas have diuretic properties. And if, people don't know what a diuretic, the dandelions have a lot of diuretic properties. And they, it actually keeps the, it makes you actually urinate so that you don't retain water.
Right. Coffee is another diuretic.
Coffee's another one, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you have a cup of coffee and you're going to, within an hour, visit the bathroom, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But the dandelion and all that. And, you don't like to, it's not healthy to hold water in your system like that. It's good, that's a constant cleansing. And these diuretics, what they do is they take actually stale water out of your system and you excrete it through either sweating or urinating. So, it you know, fresh water constantly is probably about the healthiest thing you can do. And the range in the habitat. It was confined mostly to the central Mississippi River Valley, western Tennessee, northeast to Arkansas, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana. But I know around here, actually in the past, I've seen a lot more of them, small trees starting.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's really spreading. And like I said, I think it's totally from the...
In open areas.
In people's lawns. I think people are planting it for the aesthetic value in the springtime with the flowers.
Yeah.
I just came from Tennessee last week. I went down for a wedding 2 weekends ago now.
Really?
And anyway, I noticed the catalpa tree all over Tennessee.
Really? Everybody, thick?
No, not in the woods. But I didn't spend a lot of time there either. I was in the Nashville area.
Well, you were along the highways, right, out in the open. And...
Well, but also driving through towns. We went through Kentucky on the way down, and we saw a lot of rural, rolling, you know, the farm country there,
yeah.
The horse country, really. But there was catalpa trees, mostly for ornamental purposes, lining driveways, lining pasture roads,
yeah.
Out in the open and in pastures, things like that. Like I said, it's probably planted and propagated that way.
Well, 2 years ago, I purchased a couple of they're like a fat 8-quarter. They're not quite 10-quarter, but there were two slabs about 22, 23 inches wide, and I was been for 2 years going to make a tabletop out of it, and I haven't got to it yet. But, you know, in the meantime, I have worked a little bit of lumber, and we've made a different, you know, trim and molding, you know, just instead of using, you know, 1x3 and like a hemlock or a pine, these people chose to use catalpa because it was a different color, and it's very easy to nail. Even dry, it nails good. And actually, when you bring it outside and the heartwood and put it in the ground, it actually gets harder after you do that, and it's bug resistant. And I was reading on here where there's a certain caterpillar that will eat it, and what it's a very brilliant tree in this aspect, because when these caterpillars start eating it, the leaf will secrete a juice or a sticky matter that attracts other insects that eat the thing that's attacking it. So that's pretty cool.
So that's a...
I wish the ash had that, and that they would start eating some of these the emerald. Yeah,
that would be nice, but that's you're right. I like the way you termed that as brilliant. I mean, it's not cognate in any way, but... The tree doesn't expend any energy in fighting off the insect that way.
Right.
You know, it's just the pheromone or whatever it is in that sap that attracts the predaceous insect, and then that'll feed on the caterpillar that's eating the leaves.
Eating the leaves. So
the tree doesn't use any energy doing that.
Yeah, and that's really cool. But, you know, a lot of our trees don't. I see the, you know, on Southside Road and Margaretville, that the ashes are they're infected now with, there's a couple of them that died along there, and so it's very local. I know I come over the mountain up in Hawkett, and I guess it worked its way down the valley into Margaretville now, but there is I just feel bad for that whole thing, but notice the ashes this year. There are so many of them. I would say 60% of the ash trees are loaded. I mean, right now there's no leaves on them, but they are loaded with seeds.
Even when they had leaves, they were looking brown.
Yeah.
But that wasn't because their leaves were turning brown. It was because there's so much seed up in the tree.
There is. I mean, you look at it and they're totally brown. I mean, I haven't seen ash trees with this many seeds on them. And I'm wondering if it's nature's, like, surge to... just throw as many seeds out there as possible, and
I don't know how what the cycle is on. Every tree has a cycle where they hit, yeah, mast heavy. It could be time. Who knows? Or maybe there's stress. Sometimes a stress tree will seed heavy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one. But you're right. The ash trees, there's no denying that. You saw them all over the place.
Yeah.
This fall.
And, you know, it's, well, like we talked in the past, is, you know, something else will come in and, you know, we can't get depressed or, you know, feel like we're losing something, because we're going to gain something else. And, you know, we're going to miss our ashes. And, you know, if anybody's smart, they're going to, you know, cut the ashes before they get the disease and, you know, build a shed. And, you know, like the chestnut, if you have any kind of chestnut wood now, and they were gone in the 20s and 30s, and, I mean, that stuff's selling for, I went online just to research it when I cut that tree a couple of years ago, that chestnut, and selling $68 to $70, $80, you know, for a one-by, and then when you get a four-by-four, four-foot long was selling for $68, and that's just unbelievable. So if you had a barn full of chestnut now, you could probably retire. And, with the same thing with the ash, if, you know, you wanted to put a barn full of that up, and, you know, 50, 60 years, you know, it's when the ashes are gone, there's no more. It's going to become more valuable that way, but, you know, that's a long-term investment by...
Yeah, and who knows what the market will happen, yeah.
You know, I know we're putting... they're trying to incubate and you know, nurseries and keep the ashes growing, and maybe once this thing passes, it will, they can put them back out in the forest, but... Nothing will do it as good as nature does it. I mean, they just, seeds fall, they grow, and, I mean, all our mountains, nobody planted any of those trees up there. They just grow, and it's so incredible. And, you know, then, you know, if you want to put some on your lawn or on your property, and, you know, the whole process of growing a tree is very complicated, and it seems like, but, you know, nature just does it naturally with, you know, no kind of encouragement or discouragement. And, you know, if it gets to be, you know, a small tree and something eats it off, it, you know, another seed will grow it. But, you know, my land in New Kingston, I want to put catalpa up there. So I've looked into how to maybe grow catalpa. When you cut a catalpa tree down, it kind of like it does the same thing that some other trees do, namely the willows. You know, if it touches the ground and the stump, they just keep growing. And actually, black locust does that too. But, you know, in the paperwork here, it said you could, if you're going to plant catalpa from seed, you should let the beans go through the winter. And, you know, not harvest them in the fall, but let them go through the whole winter freeze and the winter. And in the spring, you harvest the seeds and then plant them.
Yeah, a lot of seed needs to be, it's called stratification. They have to stratify for either one, or some seeds are two seasons. Like ginseng's two seasons. Right. Red oak is one winter. It doesn't even have to freeze. I've put it in my crisper in my refrigerator just for a season. And that was enough to get the red oak to sprout.
Oh, it was, yeah.
White oak doesn't. That'll start sprouting in the fall now when it's dropping off.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take root over the winter and then pop up as green leaves in the spring. But, yeah, the bean tree, catalpa, that needs to stratify for a season.
Yeah. Yeah, they say harvest in the spring to start them. But then they, you know, another way is to cut sprouts off the... But it didn't go into detail about that, so I don't know if you'd have to take a chunk of wood with it, or you just would cut it off, put it in water, and it would get roots. So I'm going to, I know where they cut a catalpa down, and in the spring I'm going to go to that tree and take a couple of signs, I guess they called, off it, and stick them in water and see. And, I mean, how's everybody's apple trees doing, the Catskill Forest together for him this year. Mine did fabulous.
You mean the grafted
the
trees?
The grafting, yeah.
Yeah. So Gary's referring to the Catskill Forest Association has a program every spring to graft apple trees. A lot of people don't know that the apple trees you see growing in the back of the lawn, the pastures, side of the road, whatever, they're all volunteer trees. They were, meaning they're planted by seed from a bird or a deer or something. Yeah. And that's all random seed. If you want to, you know, if you want a Macintosh apple, if you ate a Macintosh apple and planted the seeds inside that apple, you're not going to get a Macintosh tree growing.
No.
It's going to be a random seed. So in order to preserve a Macintosh variety, you have to graft a piece of wood from a Macintosh tree onto the rootstock of another apple. So
anyway,
CFA, Catskill Forest Association, has a program every spring that they go out and do this grafting as a service for people who want it in the Catskills. So
the bees are responsible for the cross-pollination.
Right.
Because, you know, in my garden, you know, I used to kind of save seeds from my, you know, spaghetti squash and my acorn squash and